What traveling on the bike got me was meeting people. I mean, I had to deal with governments, but I got to meet people. And when you meet so many different people with so many different perspectives, it really, for me, moderated my approach to everything and simplified my approach to everything.
You're listening to Keep Your Daydream Podcast, Episode 14, Bicycle Touring Around the World with Tim Travis.
Have you ever wondered what it would be like to leave normal, travel the world, or follow your dream? How about sail the ocean, live in a different country every year, or serve your life's purpose through a mission trip? My name is Tricia Leach, and those are the stories you're about to hear, and so much more. Welcome to your favorite podcast, inspired by dreams and made for adventure. This is Keep Your Daydream.
Wow, wow. Today is going to be awesome for any of you roadies out there. And for me, because I can't wait to hear all about it. Welcome to the show today, Tim. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm fine and excited to get going with this podcast interview.
Awesome. Okay, so Tim Travis says he's an ordinary American who decided to live out his dreams. So he saved his money, quit his job, sold his possessions, and set off to travel around the world by bicycle. Yeah, around the world. You would think with this kind of adventuring spirit, he grew up in a big city and had traveled before. But no, he grew up in a small town in Indiana. At 18, he was hitchhiking to Daytona Beach when he saw his first postcard. He had to ask the gas station clerk what it was because there were no postcards from Greenwood, Indiana. Since then, he has been around the world and sent postcards from dozens of countries. So, Tim, where was the last place you sent a postcard from?
Well, the last 2 years I've been staying in Whitefish, Montana. The whole no plans to stop obviously couldn't last forever, but I have the option of going again, but I guess Whitefish, Montana is where I'm at now.
Awesome. Okay, so maybe we need to go back to the beginning and you give us the scoop. Like, what were you up to before? I'm sure you had like a career and something going on when the light bulb went off and you were like, you know what? I'm going to go do this. Well, so what happened?
Well, it's funny with me. I've kind of always been a traveler. I've always been the kind of person that lives in the moment. I joked that I was a traveler even before my first trip. I've never liked material things that much. So there's not a big change that happened with me. The big trip, which is, I have taken many smaller trips before the big one in 2002 that lasted 11 years that most people draw attention to. But I traveled for 2 years before that and on and off. My whole life, really.
Wow, 11 years. Holy smokes. What ground did you cover then?
Oh, I left by bicycle with my ex-wife from Arizona, and for the first year or so, we traveled through Mexico and Central American countries. And the second year and a half or more was in South America, where I stopped in Bariloche, Argentina, and wrote my first book. Then from there, went to Asia and traveled through Asia for 2 years, including a year in China and a year in Australia and 9 months in New Zealand. I think I'm forgetting something. And then I traveled in America for a couple years and I was back in India for a couple years. I don't know. I'm sorry.
Oh my gosh, it's incredible. So out of all those places, do you have one that was particularly fantastic? I mean, maybe there's different categories. Maybe great because it was easy. Maybe great because of the culture. Maybe give us your top three or something.
Well, I always divide places into places I like to visit and places I'd like to live.
Oh, good.
And there's a big difference between the two. I really enjoyed traveling, and I like South America probably the best for traveling by bicycle, but I like China a lot, but I wouldn't want to live in China. For living, I like maybe Argentina, Malaysia. I haven't thought about it in a while.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so you were kind of always had this little spark, this travel, but to say, yeah, I think I'm going to sell everything and I'm going to get on my bike and I'm going to take this bike around with me around the world. How did you like motivate to do that and to follow it through? I mean, you've written three books. You've had a lot of material. So how did you motivate to get that done? How did it even start?
Well, a lot of people think there was some sort of spiritual reason, and I'm just not really that much of a spiritual person. I wasn't escaping a bad job or a bad situation. I had a wonderful life before the big trip. I was working as a teacher in Prescott, Arizona. It was about the most stable 5 years I ever had in my life, other than going to college and stuff, which is less stable. But I was working in Prescott. I had a job as a teacher I liked. I liked mine where I lived and owned the house. And I wasn't having a midlife crisis. I was in my mid-30s, you know. It was more just the gluttony of, well, I like to bike, I like to camp, I like to travel, and that's what I wanted to do. And so that's what I did.
Yeah, you know, we talk about that a lot, basing your decisions off of this, what you've been up to and what you're good at. Setting out to go and bike and do more of what you love to do, it makes sense.
Yeah, I'd always traveled off and on before I took off on the really big trip, like I said, the 11 and a half years. And I was always looking for a way to travel longer and or a way to make it sustainable, you know, and I never quite reached. I traveled for a couple years before, and I was working from town to town in Mexico and the States and whatnot, but that got hard. So I was always looking for a way.
Mm-hmm.
I found it.
Tell us more about that.
Well, for me, it's a financial equation. If you want to travel, I used to say that you need four things. I put this in my book. I can't hardly remember it, though. You need the desire to go. You need the money, the gear, and I think the time off of work were my four things.
Mm-hmm.
So all of them are easy except for the money.
Mm-hmm.
You can always quit your job and everything. So for me, there were two sides to the money equation. I did write three books, and I had at one time a very busy website. It's still pretty busy, but a very busy website where I made ad money and I sold equipment and I made money from that and the books. But all that together did not make an absolute ton of money. I was, you know, making it under the poverty level in the States. So that I had to combine with living cheap on a bicycle. So I really couldn't have done this in a car or a motorbike. There's just no way I could have afforded that. So I camped for free most nights, and I picked cheap countries to travel on, and I lived on $20 a day for years.
Yeah, well, and that's another thing we talk about a lot. And even our mutual friend, Emily Fagan, says she likes to live on the skinny. So, you know, you have to decide what is your adventure and, you know, bring those dreams into reality. I know it stinks sometimes, but you have to say, okay, this is what I want to do, but this is the reality of my situation. And how do I bring those two things close together? And saying, okay, I'm going to camp. I'm going to ride my bike. I'm going to go to these affordable countries. I mean, going to South America and Mexico, that doesn't necessarily take the same amount of cash as living, you know, living the American dream. So anyway, congratulations to you to be able to figure out how to bring those two things together and make it happen.
Thank you.
So you mentioned your books. I mean, was there a way that you were able to document everything? Were you just taking pictures along the way? Were you writing when you stopped? I mean, how were you able to just, like, bring this huge trip? I mean, you had a few little ones, the big, big one. Like, bring it and put it all down so that you could remember it. And
well, it was 2002 when we left, and it was early in the internet days, and I put up a website, and I started writing newsletters, and I got into that. And I'd mostly in the tent on battery power, you know, during storms or something, or I'd get up early. And I wrote they were newsletters, but they worked out to be chapters of each book. So I wrote one about each state of Mexico, and I wrote one about Guatemala, and I wrote one about Nicaragua, and so on. And that really is, when we got down to Argentina, I realized that that was the beginnings of a book, at least notes for one.
Mm-hmm.
And the newsletter list grew from like 20 people to at one time. Well, there were hundreds of thousands of people on that list.
You know, that does drive home when you're adding value to someone's life. I mean, it could be just tidbits, like you're writing down your day, a few sentences, a few paragraphs, a few pages. It turns into something. It turns into a lot of followers. It turns into multiple books for you. So it's really bringing something, just your experiences, bringing them to other people and then watching that grow. How cool is that?
Well, it worked out for me.
Yeah, that is awesome. So, okay, so let's see. Let's go down a little bit deeper into this trip. Maybe we take on the 11-year or wherever you want to draw from. But you had this moment where you're like, okay, I'm just going to make this happen. You figured out, you broke it down, the desire, the gear, the money, the time off. That all makes sense. How did this trip, looking back now, change you? I mean, experiences have a way of doing that for us. So when you look back, how do you relate with your life now with having all these huge experiences?
Well, I mean, it's definitely made me more worldly. But like I always said, even before I traveled, I was always a bit of a drifter. And, you know, I loved camping. And when I got a van, I lived in it. I lived in it my entire senior year of my high school. And so I didn't have a big change. I'm still pretty much the same person. People who knew me in high school are not surprised I took off like that.
That's hilarious. That's great. I love that you didn't have to break down any huge barriers. You're like, yep, this is me. And you continue to do it. But sometimes other people may get trapped in the daily, oh, maybe I need to go achieve this or attain that, and they go down this other path. But staying clear to, nope, that's pretty much who I am. That's really neat. So
I guess another factor in how I was able to do it, which is fairly obvious, is I never had kids, so that freed my money up and that freed my time up. And I don't think most people would be happy with that decision, but I was, and it worked out for me financially.
Well, if there's one thing I've learned from talking to so many people is that to each his own, you know, everybody has their own goals, and it's important to just draw tidbits from people and then apply them the way you need to apply them, right?
Right, and I have known people with kids who have traveled a long time, but it just made it easier for me.
Right, right. So let's see. There is no possible way that you've been to so many countries on a bike without running into some sketchy situations. Maybe you could give us your top few hairy, crazy, oh my gosh moments.
Well, when you're on a bike in that many countries, there's always going to be traffic accidents that you witness, especially in some of the countries with less traffic laws. So I've seen a lot of, like, a truck, I think it was Nicaragua, with bricks crash in front of me, things like that. But, you know, somehow I survived all that. You're on the road so much, you see a lot of ugly accidents just because you're on, just by the fact that statistically you're on the road, you know, 5 hours a day. And so you see stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's just exactly what you're saying. Statistically, you're there, so you're going to witness it. And it's not like you're in the back roads, right? I mean, you're where people are, and that's where things happen. So
I was on the back roads. And actually, the back roads are a lot safer for everything. The tourist areas are the most dangerous. When you get out on a bike and you're in between tourist towns, it's very mellow in any country. It's just farming people trying to get by. It's in the cities where there's other tourists where you have more problems with crime. So I did. I got arrested in China. That was one of the darker moments.
What? Okay, let's stop right there. What happened?
Oh, it's a long story. Basically, I spent almost a year in China, but I was in China at this point only 10 days, and so it was all new. And I saw people in the distance who were farmers that I thought they were in their traditional outfit, and it would be a cool picture, right? So I get my camera out. I stop on my bike in the middle of the road, get my camera out, zoom way in on them, and snap a couple pictures, and I'm realizing that there's a guy with a gun, and they're all chained together. And
oh, no!
It's a farm, all right, but it's a prison farm, and that's illegal in China, apparently. And, you know, so I got arrested and detained and questioned. That whole story's on my website.
Okay, so it was illegal for you to take the picture, or it was illegal for them to be doing that, and so then...
Oh, no, they can do what they want in China, so it was illegal for me to take the picture.
Okay, so immediately they saw what you were doing, and then police were after you?
Arrested us and detained us and questioned us, and then followed us for 3 days.
Oh, my gosh. Well, my very next question was, like, how are you received by other cultures? I would say this would be not so good.
That's the government of China, which is much different than the people of China. The people of China were warm and wonderful and really nice to travel among, other than the huge language barrier.
Oh, wow. That is amazing. So that's a very good point. You know, the government and following the rules and being in a different place. I mean, how would you know?
Right. They asked me, didn't I read the sign? And I was just like, no, I can't read you.
Yeah, no, I'm not reading characters yet. Thank you. Oh, wow. And then anything for you that you had to kind of get over? Maybe I don't really see that you had too many mental barriers. You just went and you're like, okay, I'm going to take this on. But maybe did you have to kind of push yourself to go to certain areas of the world?
No, all places are fairly equal in my book. Every country you travel in has pluses and minuses, and I just figured I'd eventually see it all, and so, you know, you're just going and trying to do it in a logical, economical manner, and just figuring you're going to get everywhere you want eventually.
Wow. Okay, so when you are getting everywhere you want eventually, what does your bike look like? I mean, what do you have strapped to it, and, like, how are you maintaining? You have to have everything on you.
Right. It depends on the country what you carry. Like, if I was traveling in India, I'd have a lot less camping gear, but a lot more spare parts for the bike, because those things are hard to find. If I'm traveling in America, where I'm camping most nights, I'd have a lot more camping gear, but I can buy bike parts on the way. So all that really changes. But you have basically four saddlebags with, I always have a tent, a sleeping bag, pots and pans, a little stove. It's everything I own. So you have to have winter clothes, summer clothes, a little more than your average bike tourist.
Right, right. And you were prepared for all seasons. You didn't just like start off in summer and say, hey, I'll buy a sweater when I get there.
No, because it's hard to buy clothes my size in some countries. So I could not count on buying things as I went as much as other people could, especially shoes and things like that.
And yeah, well, exactly that. You talk about gear in your top four things. So what were some of the things that you just thought, oh my gosh, if I didn't have this, I don't know what I would have done?
I really enjoyed having a computer. I know it's commonplace that most travelers would carry some kind of computer with them, but it was odd in 2002, and I caught a lot of flack over it over the internet because, you know, they thought, how could you ruin your trip with a computer? But I could watch movies and type and listen to music. It was a little bit of home. Be hard to live without a computer. For free camping, I use a water filter. This is getting technical, but
yeah, no, we like it.
If you have a water filter, it means you can camp for free a lot. A water filter in a bag, so you find water, like in a creek. This is if you're biking in the woods, not in Asia, but in the backwoods. And you find water, so you can fill your bag, carry the bag to a place where you can camp, and then filter the water out of the bag, and so you can drink it. And that sounds mundane, but that frees you up to not spending thousands of dollars a year on lodging.
Yes, because then you have free, clean water, which is the number one thing you need.
Well, it also allows you free camping.
So you can be anywhere you want.
99% of the time, I didn't pay for a place to stay in first world countries. And in Asia and whatnot, I would get a lot of hotel rooms.
Oh, that's great. Well, that that does give you like a nice warm shower. That's kind of a treat.
Right. Yeah. In America, I would like get a campground once or twice a week to get a shower, charge my batteries on my computer and whatnot. But there's an art to traveling cheap, and the bicycle really opens it up like no other way.
Yeah, well, I know that you say that it's technical, but anybody that really wants to do it, they definitely want to know the details. So is there anything else that you thought, oh my gosh, okay, you have your computer, so you have a little slice of home and heaven. And then, and especially back in 2002 when that wasn't the norm. Now, I mean, I don't know who doesn't travel with their computer anymore. And then you have, obviously, your tent. You have a water filter. Was there anything else? I mean, like, okay, so it starts raining. What do you do?
Well, you got a raincoat. You can put that on and ride. Or because you're living outdoors, I don't like to ride in the rain, so I would immediately try to find a coffee shop or something. If there's nothing like that, you can pull over on the side of the road and pull a tarp over you and just wait till it stops.
Gotcha.
Living here in Montana, where I have a house to stay in, I would just ride in the rain because you can come home and dry off and put your things away and change into dry things, and it's easier. But on the road, I really avoided getting wet.
Yeah. Yeah, it could lead to so many other things. You have this equipment. You're prepared. Now, I know in today's like day and age, people have their YouTube channels, and people are being followed. Like if you're sailing, you can put up videos of what you're doing. It wasn't so much like that a few years ago. But did you happen to run across people that were following you, or did anybody kind of get behind your mission and say, oh my gosh, like, I can't believe you're doing that. Come in, we'll feed you. Well, you know, what kind of relationships formed because of that?
Well, after about 5 years into the trip and after traveling through all these more remote countries like China and Asia and whatnot, we went to Australia. I went to Australia, and there people had read the books and had seen the website, and that was when I first started getting recognized by people, not often, but often enough.
That is so cool. That's a great feeling.
Of other bike travelers and just other people in general. The website was really big for a long time.
That is so cool. And so what was that like for you? Were you able to just have a little camaraderie, conversation? What was it like to have that sense of community?
Well, bicycle travelers inherently lonely, so it's always nice to have anyone come up and talk to you about anything. They usually thought I was more than I was, like I had some big epiphany or some, you know, cosmic knowledge of the world. I always felt like Forrest Gump. And when they'd ask me, I always had the same boring answers. Just, well, I just want to ride and travel.
Right, right. Oh, I love it. That's hilarious. After you go through all of this, I feel like sometimes, I understand, no big epiphany. You just got to ride. You got to be you. But that definitely changes us in some way. Was there like a sum total of your trip that you can look back on and say, yeah, I gave that gift to myself and that's what it means to me? I mean, anything that you can break down for the listener so that they know, yeah, you make that leap and you get a reward.
Well, just meeting so many people from so many walks of life, you know, and that's what traveling on the bike got me, was meeting people. I mean, I had to deal with governments, but I got to meet people. And when you meet so many different people with so many different perspectives, it really, for me, moderated my approach to everything and simplified my approach to everything.
And when you say and simplified, what does that mean? Like, because you already said you were, you know, pretty simple, pretty like straight lined. This is what I like. This is what I'm going to go do. So what changed?
Well, traveling on a bike, I had even less stuff than like when I had in college. So I learned on even less stuff. So even for me, that was scaled down. And simplify is just looking, I guess, it's just looking at everything simplistically. I don't know. That's a tough question to answer.
I know. Your life got a little bit more simple because you really understand that everybody has this life experience, and it's not, you know, we're just living it and we're enjoying it, and you just take now for now and you move on, right?
For me, the meaning of life has always been to make the good times outweigh the bad, and so I've always worked it to making my good times as much as possible with as little expenditure in the negative.
Yeah, I love that. Make the good times outweigh the bad. And, you know, it's so important to say that that doesn't have like a dollar sign connected to it. That is just taking the moment that you've chosen for yourself, and you directed your life. You said, I'm going to do this thing. And those are the rewards you got back from it. So very cool.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah. So you documented your trip. You negotiated hairy governments. You created a community. You met so many people. Is this like, are you looking to go on any more of these trips, and do you encourage other people? Do you set it up for people? What's next?
Well, for me personally, I have the income that I could travel if I chose and not if I chose. And right now I'm choosing Whitefish, Montana, because I like to do stuff that I could not do while I was traveling, like mountain bike, because I didn't have a mountain bike with me. And cross-country ski and downhill ski. So, you know, you always want what you don't have. And so traveling, I didn't have that. So I always do what I choose. And at the moment, I'm choosing to stay here. If I decide to go back on the road, it's likely. I'm a bit of a travel addict, so, you know, that may happen. But I give up thinking of, I don't think about the future or the past as much as a lot of people. I really am sort of a here and now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is something that I have gathered just talking to people and their experiences in travel. A, it is addicting. And you think, okay, well, okay, I did that. So then one thing leads to another and another and another. And you look back, you're like, oh my gosh, I've done so much, or I've become a different person in that, like, I'm capable of so many different things. But yeah, I mean, living now, really just appreciating what you're doing now. And I've talked a few times recently about the fact when you put yourself in a different culture or a different place, you have to use all your senses to figure out, okay, well, what am I going to do now? Where am I going to camp? Where am I going to get my water? I got to stay dry. There's no way you can't be in the now.
Right. Yeah, I'd say that's true. And you just got to take care of everything by day by day. And if you were supposed to ride a ferry to the next place and it's delayed 2 days, well, you just got to go with the flow.
Yeah.
Something else for 2 days, because that's how it works overseas a lot.
Yeah, right. Oh, my gosh. I remember going out to a wedding and in Italy, and we were like, okay, well, we're only here for a few days, so maybe we'll go see this town, and then we'll go in for the rehearsal dinner, and this is the train, and this is the time, and, you know, we're fresh out of fresh out of America. We're like, we have the whole thing planned. We get to the train station. The train isn't there. Then another hour, it's not there. Another 2 hours, it's not there. We're like, we are not going to make it to this rehearsal dinner. This is like not good. And the guys were like, oh yeah, it's coming. You know, we only know a little bit of Italian. Yeah, it's coming. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. We're like, what do you mean? Don't worry about it. But then as soon as we like had like a popsicle or something, I don't know, it was some tiny little stop. We were like talking to the people, enjoying the moment, although we couldn't do it that much. We really were expected to be at the, we were family of the people getting married. So anyway, and then we're like, we got to get a cab out of here. But that is the way it works. It's like one little thing leads to the next little thing. And you got to make sure you're enjoying your company around you and taking it all in. But
here's something your listeners might be interested to. The more I traveled, probably the less I planned for it. And the more I traveled, the less I planned for it, and the less I thought about it. And I just sort of did it day by day.
I like that. You know, the more you travel, the less you plan. And I've been reading some blogs lately, and they say that, like, okay, you're going to spend 14 hours on your computer trying to figure out where you're going to go to dinner. Maybe you should just go there and ask a local and figure it out as you go.
Well, here's what I wanted to say. The more I traveled, the less I planned for it. And the more I realized you just have to have a flexible schedule. So I'd enter a country, let's say Guatemala, where I'd have a 90-day visa for Guatemala. And that was pretty much it for my time restraint. I learned I don't like return tickets. I don't like having to deal with a ticket. On the bike, you're really spoiled because you leave when you want to, you camp where you want to, you stop where you want to, and you get to meet the real people of every country instead of just the tourist hawkers out in front of the bus stop.
Yeah, absolutely. It definitely would give you a totally different perspective than relying on the country's transportation and, you know, getting herded around, right?
Right. In one of my books, I called it Traveling on the Ground Floor of Society.
Ah, that's a cool way to look at it. Maybe you could tell us a little more.
Well, like I said, if you're taking a bus tour or you're traveling on your yacht even, you wind up staying in ports or different – all the tourists wind up staying in the same places. And if you want to know what those places are, just pick up a Lonely Planet guidebook, and you know where they are. And they all tended to be about 7 days bike ride apart. I'm not sure why that is. And I like these places because I need internet, and I want to eat pizza sometimes and things like that. But also, if you want to see the real country, you have to go to the places in between. And sometimes it's dirty, and sometimes there's not a big variety of things to eat, and sometimes you see some really poor, awful stuff. But that's all part of it. Going to each country is not just seeing the beautiful things. It's seeing everything.
Wow, that is so cool. And the thing that kind of pops into my mind as you're saying, you know, not everything is glamorous along the way. Well, and you're a man, so I don't know if this is the first thing you think about, but were you concerned about safety in these different seven-day spurts between civilizations, so to speak?
Well, that's safer than being in the tourist town.
Ah, good perspective. How so?
People in small towns around the world, I'm going to pick India as an example, they're just regular farming people. Like, the thieves don't hang out in small town anywhere. They hang out in the cities where there's tourists. And I used to say the wolves only hunt where the sheep graze.
Ah, I love it. That's great. Yes, that totally makes sense. I mean, yeah, you can have your pick in the big group of travelers, right?
Right. If you're in a port city, one of the most dangerous things that can happen is a cruise ship pulls in, because it changes the personality of the town you're in, and it brings out all the thieves, where otherwise it's less dodgy and less beggars and less everything.
That is so interesting. I never even thought of that. Hello. Of course.
And some places always have a cruise ship, so it's always like that. But if you go to some places that have intermittent cruise ships, you really see it.
Yeah, well, I can totally visualize when you say it just changes the town. I mean, absolutely, I totally see that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They dirty up the kids, and they make everything look a certain way, and a lot of people who normally have jobs and stuff come out and beg for money. It can be a huge scam. You have thousands of people getting off a boat who are rich beyond the locals' belief.
Right. Oh, my gosh. I'd never even thought of that. If you think of any more of these things as we're talking, you have to just interrupt me and tell me, because you are just a wealth of knowledge. I'm just finding these little tidbits. This is awesome. We talked about your sustainability. You had this great network. You wrote books. Right now, you're living somewhat in the same place. If you were to go out again, I mean, would you be willing to do what you did before and sell and move and go off again? Because
I wouldn't have much to sell at this point. I have some skis and stuff I'd get rid of, but. Yeah, I would, but I also don't have to travel by bike. I think my next trip, I've always dreamed of traveling around in an RV. It'd be more comfortable, and I could bring my skis and my bike and do that kind of stuff, and do more like Mark and Faye, maybe, move around like that. I've always had an interest in that, and that's why I met them, because we were in a real big RVing place at the time I met them.
Yeah, well, and the thing that I like that RVers and sailors both say is they get to travel the world and bring their home with them.
Yeah, you don't have to pack up and leave every day on the bike. That's what really got old is unpacking seems to go quick, but packing your tent and all your stuff, you know, really gets time consuming. And that's about my only complaint was packing. I always dreamed of like hiring helpers to pack it all up in the morning and stuff.
Yeah, right. I know when we go backpacking in Yosemite or Havasu Pie in Arizona, it's like you try to pack your pack again and you're like, how did all of this fit? I don't understand. Why does my tent feel like it's two times as big as when I left? So let's see here. The whole premise of the show is people who want to get inspired to go do something different. They have had their life, they love their life, or they want to change, whatever that might be, but they're filling themselves up. And one of the aspects that I love to talk to people about is if you were with someone and you wanted to encourage them to maybe do what you did, maybe go off and have a different adventure, what would you say to them to just, you know, outside of the Nike inspiration of just do it. What would you say to somebody who is thinking, yeah, maybe I should do that?
Well, you know, the first thing, you can't have credit card debt. You can't have student loan debt. All that practical stuff of saving up money, I think that's been talked about enough. I think people would be surprised that really the hardest part of whatever you want to do, and I've met people all over the world living out their dreams. Maybe they're on a epic fly fishing trip that's been 5 years, or you know, they're working at a ski area from town to town, all kinds of stuff. I've met a lot of sustainable travels. I actually at one time thought about writing a book about the different ways I know that people can do it, or maybe do an interview with you or something.
Yes.
But the hardest part of any big trip like that, and mine was a bike trip, but it's just getting out your front door. Once you pack up and you're on the plane or on the bus or pedaling out your driveway, that's that's the hard part. After that, it all falls into place. As long as you got money, time, gear, those things, the rest of it's not so hard.
Mm-hmm.
And and every time I've restarted the trip, like I might come back for a couple months, then hop a plane somewhere to go new. So you got to pack up again. And there's always this moment on the plane when you're relieved that, oh, it's all packed up. It's all ready to go. And it's getting out the door. It's the hard part. And everyone worries so much about where am I going to sleep or what's the future hold or how I get by. All that will work itself out. You just got to rearrange your life and get out the door.
Yes, yes. And just do it. So, you know, you mentioned sustainable travels and you'd like to write a book about that. And I would love to hear some of your perspective on that, because you're right. There are so many people talking about you got to be debt-free, you got to do this, you got to do that in preparation. But maybe remind us of some of the things that you really did have to do before you got to pedal down your driveway and leave.
Well, I had to set a house up to rent. I had to sell cars and switch bank accounts and set up power of attorney in case something happened while I was out of the country. Just all that little logistical stuff was a lot to deal with. And then you got to tell all your friends. That was a big deal in Arizona. People thought nuts. I think another thing people should know about setting off on their big thing is, yeah, you wanted to do this big thing in life and you took off, but there's consequences to that and you have to always weigh that. I gave up a teaching career and things like that, and it's worth the trade, but it was a trade nonetheless, you know.
Right. There's a cost to everything.
There's a cost to everything. And thinking that it's all going to be positive is not realistic. That you have to realize that there's the good with the bad, and you want the good to outweigh the bad in anything.
Right. But matching that dream with reality, we have to like find that happy place where they can both mix. So being prepared before you go is super important. And it sounds like that's the most challenging part.
Right. And being prepared with what you're going to give up, too.
Right. Right. But then you head on out and some of that stress melts away because you have checked those boxes.
Well, the minute you leave your driveway, that all melts away.
So know that if you're in the beginning stages, it might seem hard because it is hard. And you have to figure out how to make it happen. But then it does happen and you look back and you think, wow, I did that.
Right. And I've seen people do things that I would not have done to afford to travel, like sell their house or something like that. But, you know, there's plus and minus to it. And they sold their house and they got a big trip around the world with their kids in a yacht, things like that.
Right. Right. So let's see here. What I know that we're not, you know, thinking, I don't need the 5-year plan or anything like that. But what is today holding for you tomorrow and maybe next year?
Well, today I'm going to get changed here in a little bit and go mountain biking with my dog.
Woo! Awesome.
So, in the future, I'll probably be doing that too. And who knows where. I own a house in Prescott, Arizona that I'm just about to pay off. And that will open my finances up a bunch too. But I've always wanted to try to make it back there because that's where I left from. And I never have made it all the way back. So one day I'd like to at least go back there and live in that house for a while and then maybe take off again.
Oh, that sounds awesome. Well, and I'm hoping, I don't know, it just is really resonating with me, the sustainable travels and that practical side of getting ready because it is so important.
Oh, I have a whole list of ways people have made money traveling. They can teach English. I knew a guy who was an engineer and he did it over the internet and he lived, because he made pretty good money, he lived in one ski area after another, and I met him in Argentina. It just goes on and on, the different ways people do it. You can get a work visa for Australia if you're young enough, and play guitar on the street, stuff like that. I wrote books. That's how I did it, but there's a lot of different ways to do it.
Yeah, you know, my aunt is an artist, and someone just offered her their house in Italy and said, stay there and then go into town and paint pictures of the scenery and sell them. And then you can, you know, make your wages for the summer and go out to dinner, nice dinners, and you have a place to stay and you're doing your artwork. So, you know, figure out what your talents are and how you can manipulate them to your best interest.
Yeah. I've seen people drive semi truck and live on it and save up a ton of money that way, or work in the oil fields, or they work for a defense contractor in Iraq, and there's a lot of ways. A lot of Israeli soldiers will travel when they get their leave. They'll take their army money and take off and travel. You see thousands of them on the road.
Oh my gosh. I think it's so amazing to hear just that, who you're meeting and what's happening around you. I just spoke with a couple of people. They have a villa in Italy, and people are on their pilgrimage going down their street. So, I mean, think about the people that they're meeting, the people that you have met. I mean, it's just so cool. And what those little pieces add to your life experience.
Yeah, travel is a good experience for anybody. I always encourage it, especially for Americans to travel abroad. There's a surprising lack of Americans with passports and Americans to travel abroad. And I think if more people met us, they wouldn't have such negative views about us sometimes.
Keep going. I love that you say that.
And if we met more people, we wouldn't have such negative views of them.
Yes. Yes. There's always the other side of the coin too, right?
Yeah. And I really like student exchanges or anything like that where people are doing stuff in other people's countries is wonderful.
Yes. That is awesome. Well, Tim, it has been an absolute pleasure to talk to you and to hear your perspective and know that there's so many ways to see what you want to see and go around the world or see the United States or even your own backyard. I mean, today you're going to go mountain biking. So, you know, just getting outside and exploring and what that does to you on so many levels. So thank you so much for being here.
Thanks a lot for having me. I've enjoyed it. I just subscribed to your show and just started listening to the shows, and I really like it and think you help the whole community.
Oh, thanks so much. You don't even know what that means to me. That's great. So people listening today, where can they find you?
I still have a very antiquated looking website up called downtheroad.org, and it's just too big to convert to anything else, so it's just sort of stuck in 2002 mode. But downtheroad.org, you can find my books and my travel stories and all kinds of stuff if you're patient enough to navigate it.
Awesome. And definitely check out those three books. And I know eventually there's going to be a fourth one to come.
People want me to write a book about my early days of travel, not when I was a professional, you know, doing everything. Like when I left on my 11 and a half year trip, I already knew how to travel pretty well. But when I was just out of high school and making mistakes and hitchhiking around and staying with the wrong people and doing the wrong things, you know, I never got in big trouble. But, you know, the story with me making all the mistakes might be more interesting and educational than a professional drifting around the country knows what they're doing.
Maybe so, but you know, it really is those times when things go awry that makes the best story. Those stories live in infamy.
Yeah. So I've been working on that one. I've been working on a book about India. I don't know, as long as I have money coming in, I'm not too motivated to do anything, but if I run low on money, I'll probably finish a book up.
Oh my gosh. Well, hopefully that doesn't happen. Maybe you put yourself in a different situation where you're just super inspired. So, again, I hope you have the best day, and we'll talk soon.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Tim. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for joining me today. For details about this episode, head on over to keepyourdaydream.com and check out the show notes, links, and much more. If you're looking for travel ideas, tips, and inspiration, subscribe to our email list. And while you're there, let's get social. We post daily on Instagram, retweet awesome quotes on Twitter, and announce new episodes on Facebook. But we want to hear from you. If you know of someone with a great travel story, send an email to hello@keepyourdaydream.com, and I'll be sure to get back with you. Until next time, keep your daydream alive.